We have been looking a little bit at the book of Ecclesiastes and considering some truths here. We see that Solomon made a great experiment. He had the resources and the abilities to be able to look for meaning and purpose in life in all sorts of different areas that people might think you could find it in. And at the conclusion of this great experiment, his result was that everything is empty, vanity. It's chasing the wind, and there's no profit in anything we do under the sun. Now, his investigation is limited by that idea of the things that are here on the earth, the things that are under the sun. But he told us in the first 11 verses of chapter 2 about some of the areas that he tried to find real significance in life. He looked, for example, at fun and pleasure. He looked at the responsible use of wine. He looked at works, accomplishments, projects. He gained possessions, entertainment, women. A lot of the kinds of things that people think that's where we'll find real meaning in life. And he didn't find it in any of those things. And his conclusion again was, while he enjoyed some things he did while he was doing them, there was no residual value. Everything was really just empty. And it didn't really accomplish anything. You didn't really fill yourself up with anything here in this life. Now, that is really depressing. But as we talked about the first time we studied this, it's kind of like going to the store and I realize most of us probably would not make this mistake, but if you can imagine someone that goes to the store because his stove went out, and he goes and he finds this appliance that is spelled R-E-F-R-I-G-E-R-A-T-O-R, and he buys it to try to cook his food. And he does all sorts of things to it. He punches the buttons and turns the dials and finally starts kicking and hitting and whatever, and it won't cook a thing. And the friend who tells him, happens by and tells him that this refrigerator wasn't designed to cook anything, and it's not going to. Well, it's kind of depressing because that's what he bought it for. It's actually an advantage to him to realize that it won't do it because it's not going to do it no matter what he does. And he might as well quit beating his head against a wall, and maybe he'll find something he can do with that, conserve food or something else. When we find the truth that life under the sun is empty, it's depressing, but actually it's a blessing to know it, because we're not going to keep beating our head against the wall trying to get something out of this life under the sun that it won't give us. That's the background. Now, one of the things that Solomon does in this is to tell us why things are so empty. We can see it is, and if you've lived very long and you really have stopped to think about it, you've realized that the things you've done under the sun have not really filled you up. But why? What's the thing about these things that makes them so meaningless and empty? We're going to see some things here tonight along that line. Look at 2:12. Ecclesiastes 2:12. So I turn to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? Now, what he's saying right there is, you don't have to repeat the same experiment. The results will be the same. Solomon did an investigation that was thorough and extensive. He left no stone unturned. Anybody else who comes along to try it will find the same results. If the wisest man on the earth, with the resources of a king, cannot find meaning and fulfillment in life, no one will be able to. Nobody will ever be able to improve on his results, because he had experienced the ultimate in these things and still had not found any purpose. So you might as well save yourself the effort and learn by what Solomon went through. Here's what he found out. He says in verse 13, I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Now pause there. He determined accurately, wisdom is better than foolishness. Makes sense, right? I mean, The thing of it is, wisdom will shed light on your path. You can see the obstacles better. You can understand better what you need to avoid, how to do things. You know, fools are always just kind of surprised by anything that they come across. They never can prepare for it. They never can avoid any pitfall. They just sort of stumble everywhere they go. So the wise man will end up with fewer bruises in life than the fool. Between the two, you'd be better off being wise. But there is a factor that tends to neutralize whatever value you think that wisdom might have, and that's the end of verse 14. And yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Then I said to myself, as the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike die. So I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after wind. You know, any discussion of the value of wisdom over folly only applies to this life. The fact that death occurs to every man tends to make that difference pretty meaningless. There is one bond that unites the wise man and the fool. They both die. Wisdom may help you avoid some painful obstacles in life, but it won't keep you from dying. Even wise people die. If every card in your hand is going to get trumped, does it really make much difference which one you play? Death is going to happen to every one of us. I've probably used this illustration before, but I like it in this context. About the 12-year-old who always played Monopoly with his grandpa. And his grandpa always won. But one day, the 12-year-old grandson beat grandpa in Monopoly. He got so excited. He threw a little party for himself. He drug grandma in to see all his hotels and houses and properties and one thing and another. And he was just all celebrating and excited. And grandpa allowed him to have his private celebration for a few minutes. And then he said, grandson, now put it all back up in the box. No, that's the frustrating thing about life. Whatever it is, pretty soon it's all going to go back in the box, and it's done. It's not really much more significant than the Monopoly game. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, it's cool, but it's over. It's done. And that's the way life is. You know, in some ways, for Solomon, having so much wisdom practically backfired on him, because it enabled him to see more clearly how empty everything here is. It didn't really satisfy him, and it made him realize, you know, whether you're a philosopher or a philanderer, the same thing's going to happen to you. You're going to die. And probably may not even make any difference when you're going to die. I mean, you know, wise people sometimes die young, and some pretty foolish people happen to live for a long time. And as soon as we die, pretty much it's over. I mean, probably not even going to be remembered for long. So that's the frustrating, the empty, the discouraging thing about life. Death ends up making even the advantage of wisdom over foolishness not much of an advantage. Now look at verse 18. Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor. He says in verse 17, I hated life. Now he hates all that he strove for and worked for in life, for which I had labored under the sun. For I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool, yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor, for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. Therefore I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor, for which I had labored under the sun. I mean, the thing about it is, all the work you do here on the earth will not be remembered. You won't keep it, and you're going to pass it on to who? You know, death will separate you from what you've done, and the fruit of your labor will probably be passed on to somebody who will not appreciate it as much as you do. I mean, just think about how that usually works. The guy who works hard and invests a lot of sweat in accumulating something usually appreciates it and uses it more wisely than the guy who inherits it. You know, whatever you get easily, you tend to let go of easily without really giving proper importance to it. I mean, I find this hard to believe, but from what I hear, you know, a large percentage of lottery winners are, you know, bankrupt within a few years. You know, they got it too easily, and so they spent it too freely, and it didn't really help in the long run. I mean, there's what's probably going to happen. You know, somebody who has not invested personally in whatever I accumulate is going to have control over everything I got. It's kind of discouraging. I can't keep it, and I can't pass it on to somebody who's probably going to appreciate it and use it as wisely as what I would have. Like usual, Solomon illustrates with a little story. He says in verse 21, when there's a man who's labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to one who's not labored with them. This too is vanity and a great evil. For what does a man get in all his labor and his striving with which he labors under the sun, because all his days his task is painful and grievous, even at night his mind does not rest? This too is vanity. Just think about a guy who works hard and he leaves it to a son who doesn't appreciate it. I wonder if this isn't the ultimate irony in what Solomon says. Who did he leave his kingdom to? Rehoboam. And what did Rehoboam promptly manage to do? Lose 10 out of the 12 tribes right then and there. You know, there's a good example. You know, he managed to split Solomon's kingdom into two warring nations because he didn't have the wisdom, he didn't have the appreciation, he didn't value and use wisely what Solomon had built up. So Solomon himself leaves his estate to a foolish son who did not conserve what Solomon had managed to gain. That's probably what's going to happen to us. You know, you work hard, the work doesn't stop, but it doesn't make any sense. You know, we work hard, there's pain, there's grief, there's strain, there's stress. At night we toss and turn trying to figure out how we're going to accumulate this, how we're going to solve that. And then death, and it's over. And we never really enjoyed what we had, and we give it to somebody who won't keep what we accumulated. That's depressing. That is life under the sun. It will not help us to keep trying to get the refrigerator to cook our food. And it won't help us to keep trying to think that we're going to find some real, ultimate, meaning, fulfillment, and value in the things in this life under the sun. It doesn't work. It's not going to happen. The only thing that really matters are the things beyond the sun. Everything under the sun, you can close your eyes to it, you can whistle past the graveyard, you can try to blindly accumulate more and more of whatever, material or otherwise, but the truth is, sooner or later you'll wake up and look at it and say, it's empty, it doesn't help, I'm still as empty as I was, I'm still frustrated that I don't really have anything. And it's going to all be gone anyway as soon as I die. And death comes a whole lot quicker than what you think it is when you're young. You know, you read down to this point in Ecclesiastes, and I would have kind of expected the next paragraph to say, so just go ahead and take your own life. You know, isn't that kind of what you'd expect? But remarkably, that's not at all the conclusion that Solomon comes to. And we've got a conclusion here in chapter 2 that he comes to 6 more times in the book. This is kind of a theme of the book, but you read it, and at first, it's like, That doesn't make sense. We're going to have to think about it a minute. Look at verse 24. There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? For to a person who is good in his sight, he's given wisdom and knowledge and joy. While to the sinner, he's given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. I want you to think about some different angles on this section, and we will have occasion to come back and revisit this 6 more times in the book. But one thing he's saying is that this is the best you can get out of life. What's the best thing life can give you? Momentary pleasure. The enjoyment of the eating. The enjoyment of the drinking. The enjoyment of the work at the moment. The best way to live your life is to enjoy moments of pleasure. Don't expect them to have a carryover value, and don't try to hoard them up, because they're not worth anything after the moment passes. But there are moments of joy. There are pleasurable things. Enjoy the pleasure while you can. That's the best you can hope for in a life that ends in death. As far as life under the sun is concerned, there is nothing better than to enjoy a meal, to enjoy an activity at the moment. But now, he says something beyond this that is even more ironic and maybe unexpected. And that is that the power of this enjoyment comes from God. That you can't even enjoy the moments of pleasure unless God allows you to. And here's why. Somebody who is not living for the Lord is expecting more out of this life than what it will give, and therefore he's always frustrated and empty. He's imagining that life will fill him up. He doesn't have God to fill him up. And so it's instead of having enjoyable moments, he has frustrating moments, because it's always empty. For the one that God blesses, we did not expect more than that. We knew it was going to be empty. And so we are able, because we are investing in a whole different plan, we are the ones able to actually enjoy moments of pleasure. The others can't do it. The wicked people, they don't ever enjoy anything because it never gives them what they're looking for. So what we ought to do as Christians, as people that God gives the opportunity to enjoy life, as far as this life is concerned, we ought not to wait for tomorrow. We ought to enjoy enjoyable moments, seize those opportunities, and enjoy whatever blessing God may give us, thanking Him for it, but never trying to, and this is our problem, never trying to extract from anything under the sun something it's not able to give. It's not going to fill me up. It's not going to ultimately satisfy me. I didn't think it would. It's not going to do that. We don't think these things under the sun will do anything other than give us some momentary moments of pleasure that we appreciate, that we enjoy, that we're thankful for, and we move forward. If we can think like that, if we can understand that, if we can respect that, then God gives us this power to enjoy. So there's quite a contrast between these two types of people. There's those who know God, that have wisdom, knowledge, and joy, and they are able to find things that they enjoy. There's those who reject God, who have the frustrating business of amassing things they can't keep. They're busily storing up things they cannot hold on to. I don't think I've used this illustration yet. I may use some repeatedly in this book anyway. But perhaps what I'm about to illustrate would help us to see that difference. Because I think it's helpful if we can understand the different mindset. I think this may help us understand how God gives the one person the joy in those moments, the other person not. What do you think about two people who are planning a vacation at the end of the year? The one person, well, he works all year for that vacation. Works all kinds of overtime, saving up money for the vacation. He deprives himself of various things so he can save up more money for the vacation. He talks to everybody who's ever been there. He reads everything there is on the internet about it. He makes his plan. He's got reservations everywhere. He's got it planned out to the minute. He's got it all, everything. He's packed a month ahead of time. He talks to everybody about it. This is what he's living for. That his whole year is wrapped up in the vacation. You ever known anybody like that? How are those vacations? Usually a disaster. Because the first time there's a traffic jam, he doesn't get somewhere at the time he expects to. The first time some hotel loses reservation. The first time it storms and he can't see or do what he expected to. It just ruins his life. It ruins his year. His whole year was wrapped up in that vacation. It will never give him what he thinks it'll give him. That guy is going to come back sunburnt, exhausted, broke, and frustrated. Because a vacation will not fill you up. It will only provide some pleasurable moments. Now you think about the second guy. He's going to go on vacation at the end of the year. And he thinks there might be some cool stuff in that. And if there is, he'll be happy about it. But it's not his life. His life is the Lord. So if it gives him some moments of pleasure, fine. If it doesn't, it's not a big deal because that's not what he's living for anyway. And so he goes on vacation and actually there's some cool stuff. He sees some pretty sunsets. He sees some nice scenery. He does some fun stuff and he enjoys those things. Not everything goes well. There are some, you know, storms and there's some traffic jams and there's some, you know, blown reservations and there's this or that. But since it wasn't his life anyhow, then he's actually able to enjoy some enjoyable things. It all depends on how we look at this life. The one who serves God, well, his life is the Lord. That's his fulfillment. That's what satisfies him. And he can enjoy enjoyable things God's given here, and he'll thank God for them. But the other guy is investing too much in these things. The things here on the earth are too important to him. They are the things he's depending on to make him happy, to give him fulfillment, to satisfy him. He's got so much invested that it'll always be frustrating and always be meaningless. Do you see how much God has tried to help us? I mean, God has designed life to lead us beyond the sun. And he's told us the secret. He tells us things like this. You have to meditate on Ecclesiastes. This isn't the easiest thing to understand. But God often puts his greatest pearls of wisdom where you have to work harder to get them so you'll appreciate them once you have them. And he's told us a secret. He's helped us understand because God loves us. God actually wants us to be able to enjoy enjoyable moments here. But he wants us to live our life for that which is beyond the sun. If you've not been doing that, we encourage you to come and obey the gospel while we stand and sing.